Welcome in, everyone, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great Big 12 content over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. It's a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today. Show off your school spirit. Kyle and I both have packages coming from Charlie Hustle, and I cannot tell you how excited I am to rock that thing. They've got 30 different schools to choose from, so if you got friends that aren't Texas fans for some reason, they have other options there as well. And anytime you go, just find something that's not on sale and you can get 15% off by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm my host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's ready to never play Kansas again, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Look, I have a feeling out of all the Big 12 teams, Kansas is one that we will see pretty frequently, because I could see a basketball postseason matchup. Just that'd be a nice one. I feel like people would want to put together, like, well, what if this SEC team plays this Big 12 team? And people would try to put us on the same side of the bracket. Because I anticipate Kansas continues to be good at that. But we're talking football today, and we've had some historical moments that the internet remembers about Kansas football. But we own Kansas in basketball right now, so why not football too, right? Why not just go out with a clean sweep? Just beat them in everything.
I mean, baseball's coming, right? Softball, volleyball, all of the balls are just all the sports. Just keep it moving. Texas wants to take home as many Big 12 trophies to the SEC as they can. But this is a massive matchup on the gridiron. Playing for first place in the Big 12, basically. Both teams 4-0 on the year. First time for Texas since, I believe, the 2012 season was the first 4-0 start. Kansas has back-to-back 4-0 starts for the first time since 1914, Kyle. So it's a big year for them. Texas last year all over the Jayhawks in a game where, Jalen Daniels was limited. He was coming back from an injury, and Texas just shut down their offense pretty significantly and then ran all over them with Bijan and Jonathan. Bijan going for basically 250. Jonathan Brooks getting his first 100-yard game out of it. But Texas looking for its first 5-0 start since that 2009 season. So, Kyle, how are you feeling?
I mean, I'll just start and say you can make jokes about Kansas football you'd like. Lance Leipold has done almost maybe as good a job as I've seen in this new era of college football. Like, there's a lot on the back end that would have to happen, but you can start saying the words Bill and or Snyder pretty soon, right? Like the where he took a program that was so far in the bowels and depths of college football and legitimized them and found a formula, like it is not high. Last year was fun. Like, oh, there's look at the surprise. They're a good team. That's fun. This year they're a legitimately good team, in the fact that they are, in my power rankings, the number three Big 12 team, you know, and creeping up on OU as number two, right? And I would love the hilarity if Kansas passed OU for that spot. But yeah, I mean, they're undoubtedly the third best team in the Big 12 right now. They're a good, solid football team with exciting and fun players. And again, just a really well-run program that starts at the top with the coach who came in and just changed the mentality, the philosophy, and the way that they do things, and added talent and depth and turned them into a real deal program. You know, do I think they're going to win a national championship anytime soon? No, I don't think they're anywhere near that, but they're dangerous to any team on any given week, and that certainly does not exclude this week's matchup.
I mean, they've got an opportunity to be one of the top, like, tier teams in the Big 12. I think, you know, depending on what Lance Leipold does in the future, I think he's going to continue to be a hot name for coaching jobs. I think the strategy of hiring a coach that knows how to win regardless of the level seems to be a solid opportunity, a solid strategy there. It was a little bit of a head scratcher, I think, coming in. It was like, you know, can this guy get it done? But clearly, if you know how to win, you know how to win. It doesn't hurt that, you know, you grab a guy like Jalen Daniels, who turns into arguably one of the two best quarterbacks in the conference. You know, I think we'll probably sort some of that out this weekend. But, you know, Kansas is good. Like, Kansas is a good football program. Now, again, like you said, what is the ceiling at Kansas? I don't know. Will they get back to where Mark Mangino had them before Mark Mangino, you know, had to leave because of Mark Mangino related reasons? Mark Mangino's kind of a jerk, and we all know that. But, you know, Mangino had him humming. He had him going to the Orange Bowl. He took a picture with the Orange because they were separated at birth. But, you know, like, there is something to be said for, like, building and keeping things going. You know, they've got a lot of talent, and I think they're going to continue to build that. I think Kansas is going to become a place where, you know, you can recruit some guys in the Midwest. You know, Kansas is going to be a part of the Big 12 is really branding itself in a particular way, and I think it's going to be kind of the, you know, it's going to be an interesting conference to be a part of. And so I think if he can keep some of the in-state kids in-state and capitalize on that, you know, grab a couple of decent developmental guys, it's going to be a really, really solid program. But, you know, it is a team that is right now led by its offense in a very significant way, especially, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Parker Fleming Stats of War on Twitter one day, and it's hilarious that for years and years and years, people joked about Kansas running the triple option to kind of close the talent gap, much like, you know, Air Force and you know, the service academies have all done because of their size requirements on offensive linemen, that Kansas is now finding success running a spread triple option. It's pretty funny. But Jalen Daniels runs that thing to perfection, less running than he's done in the past, but, you know, completing almost 75% of his passes, averaging 235 a game, tossed 5 touchdowns, only 1 interception. Like, dude is dealing, and this offense is humming because of it.
Yeah, and he's an exciting player, Gerald. You made a point to say that he hasn't done it as much with his legs this year as he's done in the past, but he's still gonna, you know, he's still gonna be a threat there. He's still gonna look for, you know, 25, 30 yards a game in that offense just to give them a little bit extra. It's more, you know, to create plays than to be really a bunch of design runs, because he's too valuable to that offense for him to be taking shots. But I mean, you have a Jalen Milroe who is that electric and looks to use his legs first. And you have Daniels, who's the other end, who can be electric, but you know, maybe looks to run second. But I think they are a very efficient offense, number 34 in the country in offensive EPA. They're a good offensive line, right? Like, a lot of the conversation this year heading in was, you know, Texas has what could be an elite offensive line. West Virginia is a team that has no certainties, except they have a big and good offensive line. And then Kansas State had Cooper Beebe and a couple other, you know, guys on there. Maybe they have the best offensive line, but no one talked about Kansas, except maybe Andy Mitz, our guy. But they have a really, you know, a really solid offensive line through the first few weeks of the year. Now, I don't know that Kansas has necessarily played a bunch of world beaters, right? Their best win is probably the Fighting Illini, who we're not sure that they're as good as they were before. They beat what could be a good BYU team, right, to basically get ranked this week and open up Big 12 play. But the thing that worries me if I'm a Kansas fan, and maybe makes me look at this one a little interestingly, as a Texas fan, is they came off a game where the Nevada Wolfpack had just lost to an FCS team, had lost to Idaho soundly by 20 points to an FCS team and beat them by a touchdown. Now, I'm not saying that every team is as bad as their worst game, but it is interesting when you look at, you know, Kansas is not immune. They're not superhuman. They still have some warts on this team, but I don't think the offense and I don't think Jalen Daniels or the line are going to be the downfall.
No, I don't think so at all. I think, you know, whether it's the cavalcade of running backs they have, Devin Neal and Daniel Hyshaw are both dudes. Like, they can crack off some big runs. Like, you know, this is going to be, I think Kansas's best hope for this game, and I think Kansas's best strategy is to turn this into a shootout, and that's how they've beaten Texas in the two times they've beaten Texas, right? In both overtime games, they turned it into a high-scoring affair and got lucky late, and I think, you know, Daniel Hyshaw and Devin Neal both averaging basically 7 yards a carry. They can crack some things off. They, you know, Kansas spreads the ball around to the wide receivers. They've got, you know, three guys averaging more than three receptions per game. So, like, there is something to be said about this offense being able to move the ball. They've only allowed 5 sacks all year, 3.7 line yards per rush, 1.5 second level yards per rush. Like, it is a legitimately good offense, and I don't know other ways to say that other than, like, it's going to be a matchup, I think, strength on strength, because Texas's defense is an elite unit, right? You know, Kansas is a top 25 F-plus offense, or, you know, when you look at the advanced stats, while the Texas defense is like a top 5, top 10-ish defense. So it's going to be a legitimate strength-on-strength matchup. And I think the matchup I'm watching the most closely is, can Texas force Kansas to be more one-dimensional? Because they want to run the ball on this triple option and make you watch a lot of things. I think we're going to see a ton of Anthony Hill. I think we're going to see a ton of Jahdae Barron in this game. I think it's going to be an opportunity for them to really, I think PK is going to have to be in his bag more so than he's been all year, and he's been deep in his bag all day. I think this is an offense that's going to make you think a lot. And so I think the players are going to have to be on their P's and Q's.
Yeah, and we talk about Jalen Daniels. Jason Bean is a quarterback who plays a decent amount with them. They will have something ready for Texas where there's a two quarterback package at some point, right? There's always eye candy. There's always a little razzle, a little dazzle. You mentioned Devin Neal. He's averaging 6.9, just under 7 yards a carry at 400 yards on the season. Then Hyshaw is averaging over 7 at 7.1 on the season. So that's your two guys who've touched the ball, you know, 90 times on the season, are both averaging 7 yards a touch. So that's saying something, right? Like, again, I want to pretend that there's not some talent there. You mentioned Lawrence Arnold, and then, you know, Grimm Skinner. We'll see how it you know, trickles down when they do throw the ball. But yeah, it is not a running I formation, run it down your throat. It's a running, they get the ball spread around. You're going to get Neal. You're going to get Hyshaw. McDuffie's been a guy who's touched the ball for them a little bit as well. And in addition to Daniels, you know, they'll throw it, but they're always going to have you looking elsewhere before they show you, you know, what they're doing. It's the sleight of hand, the look over here, like your uncle used to do, where he waves his fist in a circular motion above his head and then gives you a jab to the gut. It's that in offensive form, and, you know, to their credit, that can catch a lot of teams off. But I think, man, this is the game maybe where Texas defense announces themselves. That's my gut.
If they can shut down this Kansas offense, I think it's finally time to be like, this is one of, if not the best defenses in the country. I think we're already safe, but I think the official coronation, the sword touches the shoulders and they knight them this weekend, if they're able to really show. Because Jalen Daniels is a legitimate NFL quarterback. He's a guy that's going to get a lot of NFL draft hype. And so I think if they're able to shut this offense down, I think you're absolutely right. This is the coronation. Defensively, the Jayhawks, they create a lot of havoc, but they also give up a lot of points. They're number 104 in the country in defensive EPA, give up a lot of explosive pass plays, 1.34 points per play in the passing game. But again, they create a lot of havoc. 17% from their front seven is a really high number. And it doesn't start and end with, but I think Austin Booker, Kenny Logan are some guys that I think really play a lot to do with that. Austin Booker, 4.5 tackles for loss, 3.5 of those are sacks on the year. Their defense is going to try to get after the quarterback and create havoc in the backfield and get you off schedule, which is something that Texas has done a good job of avoiding so far this year.
Yeah. They've given up more than 20 points in each of their matchups, you know, this year. Missouri State, they gave up 17, but against their Division I opponents and two of those being P5 opponents, they've given up over 20 points, right? Illinois got 23 on them. Nevada, as I mentioned, got 24 the week after, I think, getting 6 against Idaho. And BYU, who struggled to get 14 on Sam Houston, put up 27 on them, right? We know where the issue lies with this team. And I do think Texas can attack them in a couple different ways. I think that the Texas offense just needs to be efficient with the ball and just needs to go run their offense. And I think they can beat this defense. They can beat them many ways. They can beat them running it. So I think the line can control, the offensive line of Texas can control the line of scrimmage. And I think, you know, this will be a good game for Texas athletes to go out there and sparkle a little bit. I think this could be, you know, one of those A.D. Mitchell in the seam, no one can stay with him games. This could be Xavier Worthy moving around. This could be another of Jatavion Sanders' first-round NFL tape type of games, right? A player with the skill set of Sanders, right? A five-star tight end who runs a 4.5, but is, you know, big catch radius, strong guy, you know, too fast for a linebacker, too big, that the quintessential, right, tight end mismatch against a defensive back. Those types of players are the players that make the difference in a program where Lance Leipold gets talent and coaches it well, but you can see a talent gap because you just can't match that athletic freak kind of guy, right? So I think you could see a big JT Sanders kind of involvement in this one. But, you know, you also, if Cedric Baxter is healthy, want to see, you know, can Texas get multiple guys involved, right? Or is this Jonathan Brooks going to get fed the ball? And when you run for 427, as they did last year against that Kansas team, Texas remembers that. They remember Bijan, you know, shutting it down, the only reason he didn't cross 250, right? Like they remember Jonathan Brooks getting his first 100-yard rushing game against this Kansas team last year. So I think that Texas offense is really going to look to take advantage. Explosive plays could come through the air, through the ground, but I think they will come yet again.
Yeah, I mean, I think the explosive plays are definitely going to happen. I think that's going to be, again, I don't want to see a battle of explosive plays between the two teams, because I think that pendulum, I mean, it will continue. I think it will favor Texas, but I think the variability of those games continues to make my butt cheeks clinch. So I think if Texas can keep this from being a shootout, that would absolutely make me feel so much better. But I think there is an opportunity for Texas, like, you know, Kansas has really done a good job of creating turnover margin. They had three against BYU in that win. So, like, can Texas take care of the ball, or will Texas turn it? Because that's been, I think, a thing for Texas outside of the fumbles against the punts against Baylor. Like, Texas really hasn't done a bad job of taking care of the football. So I think, you know, is that going to change against Kansas, or are they going to be able to continue that trend and not give them cheap and easy short fields with this offense that's going to put up points?
Yeah, the two guys to watch there on this Kansas defense are Kenny Logan. That's not to be confused with Kenny Loggins, of course. A safety who gets downhill and hits and, you know, creates havoc from that position. I think he's got two pass deflections and interception, one defensive touchdown this year already, and a forced fumble. He's a player who's been good for them for a while on defenses that haven't been great. And then their lead corner, Kobe Bryant, and that's, we talked about this in our preseason preview, spelled COBEE. And he had a great name, and I'm forgetting it now. I'll have to have Andy Mitz tell me again, and we'll tweet it out. But he told us in the preseason what his nickname is. It's a Kobe-themed nickname. But anyways, I will find that and tweet it out. He has two interceptions, but also had a play against BYU where he blew up a screen, you know, at the line of scrimmage, forced the fumble, recovered the fumble, ran it in for a touchdown, right? So
that was an impressive play.
It really, truly
first
was.
First offensive play in the Big 12 for BYU.
Yeah, welcome, boys, to big boy football. But yeah, I mean, don't hear me say that I think Texas can out-athlete, and if they execute, just outperform this defense, to say that I don't think there's guys, if Texas isn't careful, who can't make them pay. That's not at all what I mean. And in fact, I think the efficiency is key here, exactly because of that. Because they can run their game and win, they don't need to take the risks. And if they take the risks and Kansas capitalize, then it gets wonky.
So let's talk about it and dive in. Kyle, it's time, the time that everybody comes to us for. Your Podstradamus picks, brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best legal way to play player props in states like California, Florida, and obviously the great state of Texas. It's also an easy way to play daily fantasy. You just pick 2 to 5 players and do an over-under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on an entry. It's just you versus the numbers. So Prize Picks has a ton of stats to choose from. Yards, touchdown, touches, carries, all of those fun things. They also allow mixed sports entries. You can get a little NFL, a little college football action, a little MLB action going. What whatever you want. Prize Picks has an easy to use and award winning app that you can use 4.8 stars on the App Store. So you can use that to just have a little bit extra fun on Saturdays. And anyone that uses the code Longhorn12 gets a 100% instant deposit match of up to $100 on your initial deposit in there. So if you got some change in the ashtray, in your couch, that you're just like, you know, want to have a little extra fun on Saturdays, go ahead and use the code Longhorn12 over at Prize Picks, and you can have a little bit of fun on the weekend. So Kyle, what is your first Potsdamus pick for the week?
For all the talk of who's the best quarterback in the Big 12, Jalen Daniels versus Quinn Ewers, and I think it's a fair conversation, and it will make Kansas State fans especially mad that their guy isn't included in that conversation right now. But for all that talk, you saw, as we said, 500 yards of offense last year with 427 of those coming on the ground. You saw that both of these teams in the past few weeks want to establish the ground game as a way to control the game and ultimately win it. Texas to see games out in the past two, really 3 weeks, and Kansas to get them going. So as much as the quarterbacks are the marquee here, I will be watching the running game, and I'm going to predict that UT outgains Kansas on the ground.
All right. All right. I like it. I like it. I like it. That was, I think you're right. Texas is probably going to lean on Jonathan Brooks quite a bit in that. Probably CJ Baxter is going to be back too, but I really think they have an opportunity to do that, to create an incredible margin there. So in three of the four games, Kansas has picked off the opponent two times, creating their plus three turnover margin. I think Texas is going to come out on the positive side of the turnover margin this week. Take care of the ball. Don't give them extra plays. Don't give them extra opportunities. Don't give them short fields. And you can win the game. Texas wins the turnover margin in this one.
Gerald, I thought you might go with your guy. I tried to leave it open for you in case you wanted to make a specifically Jonathan Brooks prediction.
I considered it.
Since he had 100 last year against this team for his first career, plus 100 in back-to-back going for his third straight. I like that. I actually was going to use it for my second prediction. And you know, I was looking at it from the other side, right? From the Texas defense being opportunistic, and like Lauren Boebert in a dark theater, Jalen Ford continues just to get his hands on balls. But I will leave that. I won't double up on the, or double down, or again, I'll leave that metaphor. I won't go with the margin since you've already got it. So I'm gonna move it over, Gerald. Right? We talked about last week was, I'm doing this one on the fly here a bit. Last week was the worst showing in the Banks era, I think, under the special teams. Right? And we know what they can do. They've been a top 20 ESPN S&P Plus special teams unit. They at one point, I think before last week's game, were number two in net punting. They've been, top all over in kick return defense, punt returns. They're a good unit. We know there's talent there. And don't forget, Sark brought in Joe DeCamillis as well with, 150 NFL years of special teams. So it's not just Jeff Banks who's looking at that unit this week saying, WTF, mate, because I'm sure there's an Aussie in the punting room somewhere. But also Joe DeCamillis. So I think there will be a bounce back in a big way. And I'm trying to figure out how to word that in a way that's quantifiable. I think Texas, and I said this last time or 2 weeks ago against Wyoming, will have a dynamic special teams play. And what I mean, I'll try to be a little more subjective with that. I think that means they'll have a punt return of greater than 16 yards or a kick return of greater than, let's call it 30 yards. Or okay, we'll make a notable forced fumble, blocked punt, some possession-changing play. So special teams, big play, but with a little bit more metrics around it.
I will allow it. So I think that'll be interesting. I think if Texas does that, then it's likely that my Potsdamus hits. But my second Potsdamus, I mentioned it earlier, Kansas has only allowed 5 sacks this year. So I have to go back and dance with the one that brung me. I think Texas is going to get 3 sacks this week.
3 sacks. I love that. Texas defensive line, man. The fact that I'm not balking at you, and we're not talking about a pick for the entire Big 12 season, 3 sacks, it felt like in years past. That's I like that pick a lot.
I appreciate it. So we'll be back. Currently, Kyle leads 4 to 3.5-ish. We'll see what it looks like at the end of the year, whether that half counts or not. But we'll be back on Tuesday. Recap the entire Kansas matchup.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses, starting off with college football. I won't reiterate that each of the new four Big 12 teams lost by double digits to kick off the conference play, but I did want to hone in a little bit on if we're agreed on our Big 12 power rankings after the first week of play, where things shake out a little bit. You don't just play, you know, maybe you have an opponent in common or transitive property, but you start playing each other. So I think, to me, there are tiers in the Big 12 currently, and I'm going to call it the, you know, top 25 very good tier, the bowl tier, and then the cause your fans to shed a tier. Get it? A tier. Yeah. So top tier for me in the very good, I think, is pretty obvious. UT being number one, OU being two, and KU being three. Do you agree with that as the a good tier? And do you draw the line there, or do you go one further down to include what I think might be the fourth best team?
I think, you know, if you base it on record, obviously that's where the demarcation is. I think Kansas State is good, but I don't think Missouri's good, so I don't know.
Okay.
It's tough.
All right. So you're going the same as I think I have it, right?
I think the tiers are the same.
4-0 teams are your very good teams. So then for your you know, they're going to make a bowl. There's probably some flux in here. Your next group, I think Kansas State is fourth. Then, you know, 5 through 8 to me is very interesting. All your 3-1 teams, right? How do you rank the next group? I won't even say them in order necessarily to lead you, but the next grouping of teams.
I mean, I think Kansas State is obviously, I think, your number four team, pretty clear. I still don't know. I think West Virginia is better than we're giving them credit for, because I think West Virginia knows what it is. I think West Virginia knows it's got to slow the ball and use their refrigerator of a running back to run through the ball, run through the offense. So I think they're probably higher up for me. I don't think TCU is good. I don't think UCF is good. I don't think BYU is good. Okay. That's not really an order, but I think that's like I think West Virginia and Kansas State would probably be like my 4 and 5.
I
think like BYU, and I think Kansas State, West Virginia in that order, like 4 and 5, and then like BYU, UCF, TCU, I think is probably the order I'd go with.
Okay. I like that. And you're kind of a secret West Virginia fan, but I think your secret is being exposed here. I like it. I don't know if I'm all the way on West Virginia number 5, but I get it, because no one else is good. UCF is 3-1, and you know, I don't think that Boise team that is their marquee win is that great.
They're good.
TCU is 3-1, but I the same thing for OU, right? Which OU, their best win is SMU right now. And SMU is a team with 0 Power 5 wins. SMU's not good. They might, in fact, be bad. And that's also TCU's best win. And TCU lost to a Colorado team that got very much exposed this past week. So as much as I use that to discredit OU being good, though, I'm not sure. OU's defensive numbers are jumping off the page right now, but they've played some absolute peasant offenses. But anyways, we're down on the next section. I think I agree with you that TCU might be bad, but man, I got to see it. I'm putting them as second worst in this group at 7. But I think BYU, though they're not great, has the best win out of the bunch, beating Arkansas. Arkansas played, you know, opened SEC play with you know, looked like they belonged, like they looked fine, solid even. So I think that's the best win outside of Texas beating Bama. I think the three best wins right now in the Big 12, hear it right here, is UT beating Bama, BYU beating Arkansas, and the third best win is UT beating Wyoming. You heard it here, folks.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Wyoming, I've said it before and I've said it again. I've said, you know, talked to people that validated this with people that I think know football. Like, I think Wyoming's a really good football team, and I think they're probably going to win that conference. So I think there's an opportunity for, like, that Wyoming game to look different when we're, like, looking back, you know, in 8 weeks from now. And obviously, if Bama keeps winning, then things will continue to trend positively for Texas.
Yeah. The last group, I don't care what order these are in. These are just lovely. Iowa State, Cincinnati. I have no ill will against Cincinnati. They just make their way into here. Tech and Baylor. And, man, the fact that Tech and Baylor are your bottom two. Like, a 1-3 Tech, I just... It's just,
well, you got also got Oklahoma State in that mix too.
Yes, actually, I'm so sorry that I totally was thinking we're still Big 12. We're the 14 now. It is also Oklahoma State and U of H. They're the bottom two. And that's great. Like, I'm even more schadenfreuded, right? Tech, Baylor, and Oklahoma State being three of your bottom four teams in the conference. Like, it couldn't happen to a nicer group of individuals.
I mean, I think, you know, everything running through Lubbock, I think we need to amend that to everyone runs through Lubbock. Ooh, I think it's probably the right way to say that.
Oh, I like it.
But I just, you know, I feel bad. Tyler Shuck, like, that guy cannot stay healthy. And I think they were going the way of the Shuck. And I still think Shuck is probably, it's just, it sucks for them. Like, I legitimately feel bad. I have no ill will toward Tyler Shuck. I think, you know, not necessarily the way that he would have liked to see that end.
Yeah, they call him Mr. Glass, and that's just plain mean. U of H is the one. I hope they claw their way out of the bottom and leave Tech and Baylor and Oklahoma State there and get, like, you know, to around the Cincinnati territory. Cincinnati and Tech can fight. Let's close it out, Gerald. I just wanted to point out this last thing. Wyoming won over App State. App State took Mack Brown's North Carolina top 15 team to overtime 2 weeks ago. Bama obviously beat Ole Miss, and Rice lost to South Florida, who played Bama close. So basically all those teams look like they're pretty good, and it just strengthens Texas's strength of schedule, right? Wyoming getting that App State win before they head into their kind of meat of the conference with an Air Force game coming up. I think really good for Texas. Bama looking, you know, alive. You mentioned zombie Bama. I think it's just good for Texas. At this point, I'm rooting for all of our opponents because it helps us.
One thing we got to do before we move on, K-Ford Ratings, our friend Kelly Ford, if you don't follow K-Ford Ratings on Twitter, you're doing it wrong, has Texas as the number one most deserving team because 11% of the top 25 teams would have an undefeated record against that, meaning it's the toughest schedule according to his rankings in the country. Conversely, Georgia, not even in the top 25.
It is what it is. I would prefer Georgia's path to the top where you don't play anyone and you just cakewalk in. But I'll take it the way Texas is doing. You got to earn it to be there, back-to-back national titles. You can still have the high ranking. Let's take it to the next level, Gerald. Longhorns in the NFL. Who is your Longhorn of the week?
Got to be Andrew Beck, right? Like, the surprise kick return. Dude's been thinking of that since a childhood, and to get to do it as a fullback in the NFL. Just absolutely incredible.
I don't know if everyone knows the etymology of the, besides this one, I guess, the internet's only college football podcast, the Shutdown Fullcast. It used to be a YouTube channel before podcasts, I believe, called Shutdown Fullback. Starring Spencer Hall and Jason Kirk, and it was tremendous back then as well. But I always thought the name was just hilarious because you have shutdown cornerbacks and you have fullbacks, and the fullback has been phased out of the game, but the fullback is still the most, like, lulz position. Like, you know, think about Mike Allstott, all just neck muscle. And yes, that's basically what Andrew Beck is. He's the new generation of fullback, the up back kick return for 85 some odd yards, hurtling, stiff arming dudes on the way in. If I'm Andrew Beck, I'm texting every skill position player at Texas I ever played with and saying, how many kick return touchdowns you got in your NFL career? Like, just gloat, take the victory tour. I loved it. Bijan Robinson took some big hits, had some nice segments kind of said about him. I think this will be, you know, a week that is forgotten a little bit in his rookie season, because he's gonna have some really, really great ones coming up. Like, I have no doubt he's had two great ones. Even in this, if it's his it's his low point against a salty Detroit Lions, right? He had still had 60 yards, you know, on 14 touches. So didn't get the ball quite as much, but 33 yards on the ground, 27 yards through the air. So I think there's more upside games for Bijan, but if his floor is that, kid is as good as advertised. All right, Gerald, one piece of news I wanted to point out just because the story is so interesting. Cristina Sanchez Quintanar named an assistant for the women's tennis team under Coach Howard Joffe, a former head coach at Arkansas, a former national assistant coach of the year at UCF, and a WTA professional. My favorite part of this is she played under Howard Joffe, for sure. She played for him at Maryland, then followed him to A&M. But that's not the only place she played. She's like an all-time, if I were an Aggie, and thank God I'm not, and did an Aggie podcast that was covering all Aggie sports. Gosh, I feel sick saying all of those words. She might be like on my Mount Rushmore of most cool players, just because not only was she a multi-sport star, but she had like deep, deep postseason runs in the Aggies' glory days of the 2013s and 14s.
Yeah, I mean, what, soccer and tennis?
And basketball.
And basketball. The rare three-sport star, right? Like, that's just like elite athleticism. Like, how, like, I can't even imagine. I'm not that good at breathing. I can't imagine being that good at three sports.
Yes, she made a Sweet 16 in soccer and Elite 8 in basketball, and that tennis team under Joffe was national runners-up. So, she's got the chops, and I feel like if you're a Spanish athlete, that really is the trifecta. You have to play soccer. Football is in your blood. But then after Nadal, tennis, of course, takes over, and then, you know, the Spanish basketball team is pretty solid. So it makes sense. Welcome to the 40, coach. Hope you're here for a while. I could also see it being a rehab kind of thing, and she's a head coach again very soon. But while she's here, let's win some championships. Speaking of championships, our guy, Eddie Reese, to retire after the 2024 Olympic trials. They say goats don't swim, but then comes Eddie Reese.
He's 46 seasons deep, 15 national championships. Like, the dude deserves an opportunity to just rest. He already came out of retirement once. Let the man go.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. He's officially retiring in late June, but a national search committee was announced by UT at the conclusion of the season in March. And if that sentence doesn't just scream CDC, like a sport that, you know, money isn't quite as prominent as others, right? We can go money whip, folks. A legendary coach leaving, so everyone knows the program is already there. Can they, you know, take it and establish their own legacy? He can go out and get anyone anywhere, and that's where CDC excels. Like, he's made that hire before, and I'm excited to see who they get and how this goes.
I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be, I don't know, whoever coached the last national champion is going to get hired away. It's just generally who I assume is going to get hired by CDC in these situations.
Yeah, I love it. Couple days left, Gerald. 40 days until the men's college basketball season kicks off. And some rankings are trickling out this week. It was the Basketball Almanac's preseason rankings. Texas at number 12. And excitingly, they also put out top 100 players. Tyrese Hunter at number 47, and our guy Max Asmus at number 9.
Can't be mad about that. I mean, Texas, high expectations once again. I think when Rodney Terry lost the two big high school recruits, I think expectations lagged a bit, but I think with the transfer portal job he's done, I think those expectations have shot right back up to the top.
Shooting to the top, but taking us to the end. Gerald, the bottom of our notes here would have been a better metaphor. Starting at the top, now at the bottom. Gerald, it's time to take us home with a little bit of Godzillatron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
My wife and I are fans, actually, of the Wheel of Time TV show on Amazon. So you started season 2. We like it just as much as we did the first season. It was not everybody's cup of tea, but we enjoyed it. And I was inspired to start listening to the books because I honestly assume that the show is not going to get through the 16 books before it gets canceled. So I'm going to start reading the books as well because I want to hear how the story ends. So I'm starting to listen to the audiobook. I'm not a physical book reader because of the ADHD. I'm a slow reader. I get distracted and it's frustrating to me. So I will be listening to The Wheel of Time while I work and while I mow the lawn and that kind of stuff. And then we're watching season 2 of the show.
I love that. Gerald, I am banging the drum exclusively on something that I watched on a giant screen. There was a performer and a giant screen behind that said performer too. In fact, screens in Energy Arena this weekend. Television, what can the silver screen, you know, say that the Queen cannot? Movies, they pale in comparison to even the B-roll that plays in the background while she performs. Queen Bee, Beyonce, the Beehive, came back to its rightful home of Houston, Texas. And jokes aside, and hyperbole only slightly aside, one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. Like, just unbelievable energy start to finish. 3 hours fly by. Everyone from teenagers to, you know, 70-year-old grandmas dancing for 3 hours straight. Really truly incredible visuals, incredible Cirque du Soleil-esque performances going on. It was a great show. My wife is a huge Beyonce fan. And one of her good friends from college is her tour manager. And so like, this was never are we going, but how good are our seats going to be? And so she was down in the Club Renaissance, like in the pit, and had an experience and watching videos and that she took and talking it through with her versus I was in the club level. I had great seats. After she upgraded, I got her old tickets, but it was just such a great freaking performance. Like, honestly, it's the way that I feel like people talk about, you know, who were alive in the 80s and saw Michael Jackson and like people fainting at his shows just because of the level of like, there's certain people who just were born to perform and be stars. I think it's like the 40th show on this tour over months. And she performed it like it was a one night only deal. Just the energy, the like connection with the crowd, the like, she just doesn't miss, man. It was electric. I would say go see it, but I think there's only two shows remaining. So check the inevitable Netflix or HBO documentary when it comes out on it, because it was theatric and it was over the top and it was amazing.
As long as you properly hit the mute, Kyle, then I am proud of you.
She said Houston show two, which was us, won the mute challenge. Now, there are still two shows, but that was my mute. I did it. I muted again.
Proud of you. Yeah. Proud of you. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on the socials media at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on the Twitter X. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on the Twitter X at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Threads, at Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back on Tuesday with our recap of this pivotal matchup for the top spot of the Big 12. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em, Jayhawks, not even a real animal.